Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of the What Does It Take podcast. And yeah, I'm your host. As you heard from last week, I'm the same guy who was hosting it the week before that too. But today's guest is one of the colleagues I work with, one of the loud mouths. When I started this, I was like, I know. He definitely needs an episode or a few number of episodes in the podcast. So yeah, okay, see you.
Hey, hi, how are you? Listeners, how are you guys doing?
So we're going to be talking about what it actually takes to start an SMME in South Africa. The king has started way, way too many businesses. So even before we started recording, he was talking about some other stuff. I had to wait for him to finish discussions. But yeah, I don't know. Where would you like to start?
You've got people that would actively want to know what it takes to register a business. If you're going to register more than one business, I'm not taking anything away from people whose services are to register businesses. I mean, if you don't feel like you have the time and the patience to go through that whole process, then get a company that's going to do it for you. But most of the times you should get a business. If you want to register a business and you've got your idea, you've got your feasibility, you've got everything, and if you go through that whole process of identifying what your business is, 90% of the time, by the time you're done, you've got business names that you've got in your head, and you've got an image, and you've got a direction of what you would like your business to do and what it'd like it to look like. Then it makes it much easier for you to go to the CIPC website, and then you get a couple of the forms. I mean, you fill them in, you complete everything, you put money into the CIPC account that you find on the internet, and then from there, you just, once the money starts to show as a credit, it probably takes about 2 days depending on what bank you're using. Then when it's on the CIPC account and it shows your name and it shows how much credits you have, you're going to get access code, right, and your profile. Then you go in with into your profile, and then you will see that your credits are there depending on how much money you put in. Last I checked, it was 175
to register
a company. You reserve a name, which costs a couple of monies. Then you fill out your certificates, and then you apply to the CIPC, and you've got a company. And if you do it properly, the CIPC has got a very, very quick turnover time these days. So within a matter of 2 days, you should have a registered company with all your registration certificates and your letter that you take, the tax letter that you take to the SARS. You take to SARS, and then the SARS will give you, tax clearance certificate. And then you've got your tax clearance certificate. And since you're an SMME, if you are an SMME, right, when you register and then you need a BE certificate, you go to the internet, and on the website of the CIPC, they've got a thing that says a BE certificate, or you just type BE certificate in the internet, then it'll give you a format of a BE certificate that out, and then you go to the police station, you get it certified, and then that's your BE certificate use. Then you've got your tax clearance and you've got everything, and you're ready to operate as a business. And another thing that most people should not forget is your tax implications thereof. You keep your tax. A nice thing that I found, one of the cheapest business banking options that you can use is FNB. And FNB gives you online, attached to your business account, is accounting service. It's not really the best, but it should work. You know what I mean? As long as most people, you make sure that your transactions, right, are aligned to your business account. So if someone wants to pay you, for instance, right, ask them to pay you to your business account rather than paying you cash. If they do pay you cash, go to the bank and deposit the money. Even if you keep it over a while, every week, then at end of the week, you go and deposit the money in the bank. So that at least you keep a journal, right, of your transactions. Who paid you what and who you paid what. And another thing that you should also say is that you pay yourself a salary for being an employee of the company. Because most people want to take at the money of the company and eat it. Basically, there's no other way I could put it. They want to spend it wherever they want to spend it, you know? Yeah, but then that's not something you should do. My business mentor from quite a while ago was my uncle when I was growing up. My uncle said to me, you should have enough money to operate in your bank account. anything more than money to operate in your bank account, if it's in your bank account, right, you're costing your company. Because what you should do is look for ways in which either to invest that money or to buy more stock with that money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stock with you is much more, is much more productive for your company and your brain than money in the bank account. Do you understand? Money in the bank account means you must spend it. You know what I mean? You feel like you need to buy something. Like, oh, I must buy this watch. Oh, my bank account's got this much money, buy the watch. Big mistake. If you had bought stock for your company, whatever, let's say you're selling books. If you'd bought books with that money, you wouldn't be able to buy that watch. And you'd be using your brain to think of ways to sell that book because you want more money. Do you understand what I mean? Sometimes it becomes a loss. Okay, sure, the book gets outdated, then the prices become cheaper or whatever. But it's better to use your money that's in your business account to buy more stock and try to get more business, right? And use it to engage in activities that help you to get more business.
Yeah.
Go to markets. Go market your product.
So on top of the whole, your business bank account should only have enough for operating. Like, as your uncle told you, that one reason was you are not going to be compelled. But then the other reason, I think I once heard someone saying it's for tax reasons or something like that.
Yes, it does work in a sense that if you've got money, right, then the tax man, actually your tax implications don't, I wouldn't attach them directly to that, right, because you're going to pay tax, right? First of all, we must know that there's a line, I'm not quite sure how much it is right now, but there's a line in which you don't get taxed. If you are a business that's earning less than a specific amount, then you don't get taxed. But the whole thing about that is that you have to have operating expenses. You know what I mean? So if, let's say, for instance, you're making money, but you're not paying yourself as an employee, right? Because most people don't write it as an employee that they should pay themselves. Then that means that your company seems to have more money than what you actually do have, because you're not paying yourself. You understand? So if your company makes, let's say, 100,000 rand a month and you don't pay yourself, the taxman is going to see your company as profit of 100,000 rand. Whereas in actual fact, your hours that you spent on there are worth 40,000, for instance, rand in that month, right? Then what you are actually making is 60,000, which I don't know what the bracket is, but you might find that that 60,000 might actually say you don't get taxed. But now you get taxed because you said you had 100,000, but then you don't pay yourself and you don't, you know, you don't pay the people. And when you pay the people, you must have a registered thing that says I pay the people. You must look at the labor laws. That's another thing that most people don't look at. There are labor laws that go with these things. You must investigate those labor laws. You don't just hire people on the pretext and say, I'm going to hire five people, nyana, then utlo bereka so. Because what ends up happening is that people don't take that into cognizance. And then when the people come with the labor laws, they hit you very hard. Because you've been evading what is and what's not. You know what I mean? And you must have a structure for your permanent employees and a structure for your temporary employees. You know what I mean? And also for your subcontractors, if that is also a thing.
Okay, no. I hear you. That's more of the technical stuff.
That's more of the technical stuff.
So
yeah.
I like to go with the informal things like, what is the greatest lesson you've learned from doing business, and what's the biggest loss you've ever made, and how did you ever get to that? Comfortable talking.
Yeah, man. Okay. Comfortable talking. If you say something like, what is the greatest lesson that I've ever learned? The greatest lesson that I've ever learned is that it's not that government doesn't help. It's like, it's just that I never knew how government helps.
Okay.
Because you find that most of the times you want to do something in your business, but you say, "Ah, government is not helping us." But the way government structures its things and the way they market their things is in such a way, it's like they're doing it in secret. Do you know what I mean? It's like most people don't know.
It's like what you chose.
They're like, "Hey, you can apply for 20 million rand here at the IDC," and you're like, "Yo, 20 million." Then you go to IDC with that mentality that, "Yeah, I'm so apply like 20 million," but you have no idea of how to. You understand? I believe that most people are not taught how to fill out the forms properly, how to do the things properly, and they're not taught how this 20 million is available. You understand? Another thing that's helping me with the studies is that I'm learning now exactly. Now, imagine me. I would like to think that I'm an educated person. It only took me up until now that I'm learning that it comes in specific percentages. And this is how it works. Because I was never in that field to understand that. I was more in the field of entrepreneur. I'm like, hey, let me make money. Government doesn't give any money for whatever. But they do. But they do it in a specific way. And in order for you to qualify, you have to have a specific thing that you've set up in a specific way. Do you understand what I mean? So for me, the biggest lesson I've learned is that there is help out there.
Yeah.
It's just that, unfortunately, the help is not put in such a way that the lowest of the low people
have
understanding. They have access, but they don't have the understanding. You know what I mean? So more drives, I would say. And when I say lowest of low, I don't mean it in any derogatory manner. I'm just meaning that the lowest business, the SMMEs, if you look at the SMME structure and you look at how they compose small, what they mean by small, what they mean by micro, what they mean by medium enterprises, that type of structure. If you look at the smallest ones that are on that structure, the reason why they don't grow so much is because they don't understand how to get access to the funding and they don't have the proper managerial skills. And it's of no fault of their own. You know what I mean? Because you understand that Kokas, if you have a business, it's a family business.
Most likely.
Most likely. You know what I mean? If you're not a spaza shop, your uncle's spaza shop, the manager of your uncle's spaza shop will never be anyone but someone of your family. Your uncle will identify a cousin or identify a brother.
It will most likely only be the uncle.
You see? Yes, but if he's going to get someone to help him, it'll probably be his son or his, you know?
Yeah.
They try to pass through that. And I've got nothing against family-run businesses. But for me, a more structured business is a business of an independent person that comes from the outside. You know what I mean? Somebody that works without that thing like, business up a park. There's no one going to tell me. So that is also something that sometimes flaunts businesses. They don't have the proper managerial skills or the proper training skills to be able to run a business, you know? You might have a great business idea, but you've got no accounting knowledge. You know what I mean? If you don't have accounting knowledge, don't be afraid to go to someone who does understand accounting and be like, hey, dude, listen, how much does it cost for you to teach me accounting skills? And if the guy doesn't charge you too much money, then allow him to do your accounting for you. You're building a network. Another thing that we've learned that hit me very hard when I was studying is that I didn't have a network around me of people that understood everything. We must have. When you have a legal problem, don't try to solve it yourself. Pick up the phone.
Call your lawyer friend.
Call a lawyer friend. And don't treat that lawyer friend as someone who's going to give you a dice for free. Pay him for it. So he understands that he's gaining something from you.
Yeah.
Right? So when he ever needs something else that is related to whatever, he'll say, oh no, but that guy buys from me, so I might just as well buy from him when I require stuff. You know what I mean?
Or so, if you have that type of relationship where you work with each other for free.
Yes. But my biggest thing is that I try as hard as I can to motivate that people shouldn't do that where you work for each other for free.
Absolutely.
I try my best to say, let me pay you. It doesn't matter what the price that we agree on, but let me pay you for your skills. Unless you're my business partner and we're working for the same company, then you know what I mean. But even then, you register the amount of hours that you spent on something. Because we must all put equal effort if we're going to be in a partnership or something like that. So in essence, if you say, what are the biggest lessons I've learned? Is one, there is help. You just have to. But then everybody always says you just have to find it. Isn't that funny? Because people will tell you, you just have to find it. And then you look at them, you're like, where? If I haven't been able to find it until now, where am I going to find it? You know what I mean? So most of the things that I find is, I found most of the help that I found in papers, which is weird, and research papers. I found more information in research papers than me trying to Google the stuff. Do you understand? Because a research paper, if I say, let's say, issues that stop SMEs from growing in South Africa, right? If I put that into Google will not give me the DTI, for instance. It won't give me all the programs that the DTI has, for instance, or the programs that are run by a specific company, or all the incubators. It won't give me that. It'll just give me a bunch of problems, like six of them. Then you'll have to take those problems and decipher which one is affecting you. Whereas if you actually go to Google Scholar, then you say issues surrounding SMMEs, same thing. Google Scholar will give you a paper. And I mean, the papers, as you can see all over my table here, about 10 pages long. If you read through those papers will lead you to other papers.
Yeah, obvious.
And more and more and more, and then you put those things together, and then those things will, they don't only give you problems, right? They give you problems with some associated solutions. I say, no, but this problem is a problem. Like, let's say access to finance is a problem, but mm-hmm. access to finance, you can fix it through this. And the papers tend to explain exactly what those programs are. So they take all of these things that you find from the government departments and they put them in one place where you can find them, all of them. And then you just read through that. And then if you feel like this one works best for you, mm. and then you go onto the internet. Unfortunately, we're moving into an ICT world now. You go to the internet and then you focus on that thing, and then you get the forms and you get to understand how the forms work, and then you apply to that. And every time government has seminars on these things, you attend them. Mm-hmm. When they've got this SMME thing that they have in, or they say SMMEs must apply and come through mm-hmm. In Joburg or wherever.
The Indaba.
Then you go to the Indaba, you'll meet people, you'll mm-hmm. conversate with people.
Mm-hmm.
But now, another thing is you must conversate with people with the intention of growing your network.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that you must do. And it works out. Sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. But so the other question was your greatest loss, the situations that were gone bad.
Yeah, man. Let me say, there's a greatest loss that you can discuss and a greatest loss that you can't discuss. I'll say, to tap on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some losses where the people didn't pay.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing that you understand in business is that you've got subcontractors to some stuff that you do,
mm-hmm.
and you are the main contractor. And as a main contractor, you do work for someone, and then this person doesn't pay you.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the people didn't pay for whatever reason they put up there that they wouldn't pay, but your subcontractors had to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And the lesson I learned from that is that you have to have some kind of surety that the people will pay.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that form of charity. What I looked down on was that happy-go-lucky life, because for my smaller businesses, I had a happy-go-lucky thing that, whatever, I'm going to design this thing, I'm going to make it. If this person doesn't want it, I'm going to sell it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But now you find a problem where you are actually doing something in somebody's yard, or mm-hmm. you're fixing their stuff. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? If I'm fixing your house and I'm extending your house, and then I've got some other guys that are bringing me bricks, I have to pay those people.
Yeah.
Which goes into operating costs. I have to pay those people. Then I pay them and I pay everybody else. But now when it comes for me to be paid, then the person doesn't pay, or they take a substantial amount of time in order for them to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, my greatest loss was that.
Mm-hmm.
I lost quite an amount of money
mm-hmm.
Due to that. And I actually had to take up loans
mm-hmm.
To actually cover the amount that I had suffered
mm-hmm.
in order for my business to be able to operate. So yeah, went in it. And I learned my lesson from that. And
you need to have short.
You need to have short. And it also taught me another thing that you need in business is insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And this one didn't teach me insurance in that sense, but it brought it up as well
mm-hmm.
From the lessons, because the insurance wasn't to do with the people not paying, not insured for that.
Mm-hmm.
But insurance is basically, if you're working on something, you need to have business insurance. I see now with a lot of government-related stuff, it's a requirement that you must have business insurance for the project.
Mm-hmm.
At least so you need to have insurance, even if your company is a fridge
mm-hmm.
Or whatever. You need to have insurance for your stuff, because things go missing and things get damaged.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the worst part that happens to black business is that when it happens, that thing happens,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any insurance, and then mm-hmm. there you are by yourself
mm-hmm.
in trouble.
It's gonna call someone,
you see,
but that person is not in a position to help you.
That's it, mm-hmm. most of the time. And that person's not entitled to help you either, because
mm-hmm.
they don't see any gain in it.
Okay.
So you have to also find a fundamental way you say that you actually get insurance for that. And for me, I learned in that sense that, first of all, surety is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And in small businesses, I was saying before, most people find that they don't take that because, you know, Ahmed, he'll pay me, it doesn't matter. If he doesn't pay me, I'll sell it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually becomes quite a thing. And then you think you're going to use that same mentality in
mm-hmm.
bigger business, and
mm-hmm.
it doesn't work. And that's the evolution of an entrepreneur, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
First, you come in as what you tend to call in my olden days a hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I know I'm a hustler. Mahlanganisa. No. Once you start to get to a stable business place,
mm-hmm.
this is what I'm saying. If you're a business person and you have a business person next to you,
mm-hmm.
right? When you move on to the next bright idea,
mm-hmm.
that person that you've groomed will stay and do that business.
Mm.
Do you understand?
Oh,
and
yeah,
you
yeah,
must
yeah.
learn
mm.
interpersonal relations as well, because mm. the relationship that you have with people will tell what your business is going to be like.
Mm.
Whether those people will steal from you, whether they'll cheat you, or whether they'll leave your company to go start their own because now they can.
Mm.
You understand?
Mm.
So you have to make sure that you maintain that relationship with all the people that work for you and keep them with a smile,
mm.
basically. Yeah. And that was my greatest loss and
okay.
my greatest lesson.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for sharing. So, I don't know, where would you like to start? Like,
I'd basically like to start with saying, okay, I'm Matthews Melisizwe Setosa.
Oh, didn't know that.
Yeah, no worries. I'm an engineer by profession. And I'd like to basically start by saying that it doesn't take much to start a business, especially an SMME in South Africa. But you have to have a specific vision, I must say. You must have a vision of what you're trying to do, and you must have a target market, and you must do a thorough study of what you actually want to embark on. Because the biggest problem, let's start there. The biggest problem that's found is that people don't do enough of feasibility study of
mm.
their business model, and they don't develop a business model even to start with. So you'd find that there's a bunch of people that actually just start a business just for the mere fact of starting one. You
mm.
know what I mean? And then they want to turn around and say, okay, no, listen, but there's not enough support, or people don't buy black, or people don't do this and that and that and that and that.
Mm.
And those are understandable points of argument, but
mm.
we must all understand that you must start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You start somewhere, you start with a specific vision, you do your homework first before you expect people to buy into your dream, buy into your own dream, basically is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So if, for instance, you start off a business, right, let's say, you must have a vision, you must have exactly what it is that you want to do and what exactly it is that you want to provide, who you're going to provide it to, right? Understand, ask people, go to the market and investigate how much it normally costs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because another problem that we have is that people would, let's say, import something from China
mm-hmm.
and then sell it in South Africa for an exorbitant amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then people get irritated when somebody says, no, but you can import this thing from China with a little import tax, and then, you know, as long as the user is going to save,
mm-hmm.
the user is going to try his best to always save.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you, as a person who's trying to sell whatever it is that you're trying to sell, have to be competitive in your environment.
Yeah.
Right? Or you have to have a unique thing that you take across.
Yeah.
I've got nothing against people that say they want to import stuff. Most of the people import stuff. I mean, if you look at your companies like your ShopRites and your Pick and Pays and most of them are middlemen. They go to the producer, they get the stuff,
mm-hmm.
they put it and they package it in such a way that they attract you to go there and buy the thing,
yeah,
right?
Call it no name.
And then they,
mm-hmm.
I actually don't care what they could even call it. ReCoffee,
mm-hmm.
for instance. ReCoffee, they don't make ReCoffee.
Mm-hmm.
They get it from the ReCoffee factory. So in essence, even ShopRite in itself
mm-hmm.
is basically a middleman.
Mm-hmm.
So people like to say, no, there's middlemen. But if you're a middleman in your business, for instance, you have to understand your demand and understand how you're going to market yourself to make it easier
mm-hmm.
for the customer to be able to buy whatever it is that you'd actually want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? Now, that's the ideology. That's where the marketing aspects come of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And another thing that kills most businesses in their young structure is that people don't know how to market themselves properly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd find that, let's use an easy platform, Facebook, for instance. If you're on Facebook and you've got a company, right? Most people link their Facebook profile to their company.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that you or me as a client want is, hey, I'm looking for this awesome jacket, and I get there and I see a picture of your kid, and I see your political views, and I see whatever it is that you've been putting up on your Facebook.
I see your beef with someone else that's currently happening as well.
What do you mean?
Like you're having an argument with someone.
Exactly, yes. No, totally. You get to see that somebody's arguing with somebody, and you've got a political point of view that you, then it turns you off as a client, because now I have to scroll through all your stuff in order to get to what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And when I press pictures, let's say on Facebook page, when I press pictures, I see a bunch of 20 million pictures that have got nothing to do with anything.
The business.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And another thing that you find is sometimes people would overpost stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You go to your page, there's 20 million pictures, but the pictures don't show anything of high value.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn a marketing gimmick. You'll never see ShopRite putting its laundry out there in the world for everybody to see. And
mm-hmm.
you'll never see ShopRite advertising every single thing that's in the shop. They'll
mm-hmm.
put a special on something that they know that the market is looking for at that time. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
You told what you,
that's it.
Also.
You'll find what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for you to get to what you're looking for, right? They'll show you on the picture, but in order for you to get to it on the website, you'd have to go through a couple of other things first. Then those things might even market you. The same thing as the shop. A shop is structured in such a way, people don't just get a shop and then you just put it the way you want. There are specific elements to designing your shop even. And those are the things that you have to learn. And another thing that we have to stop as young business is trying to do everything ourselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You must understand that you are not the big all and end all of everything. And you must spread your business in such a way that other people have a fundamental part that they play inside your business. Meaning that you are not the only one in your business. If something happens to you tomorrow, your business doesn't collapse.
Yeah.
Do you understand? It must continue because somebody else, you must have what they used to call in the military, a 2IC. They still call it that. Second in charge. Second in command. Second in command, second in charge.
No, that's... That one, I think it's a major thing because a friend of mine started an internet cafe, Gomlot, and it works, it's nice. He took a caravan, basically put three computers in there, and there's no one else in the region who's doing what he's doing. So it's a good business. But one thing I told him when I got there and when we started talking was, as long as he's the only guy there, it's not a business.
It's not a business,
yes. And also, if that's his only branch, it's not a business as well.
I understand that, but building a branch is something else, I would believe. I believe it takes that guy, the same guy with the caravan, right, to make that caravan work. You must understand what the issues are with regards to that caravan, what's positive and what's negative, you know, and do a proper analysis of how that one works before it goes into franchise. Because the thing that we don't want is you haven't learned the proper business model and how to make it, and then all of a sudden you're opening another one somewhere else. Then you find that you've got the same problems all over the whole place. Then you end up digging yourself into a hole. What I would rather suggest to a person who is like that is to say to them, listen, find out what the problems are with this one first. Note, when you learn something, it's better you learn something. And as they used to say in university, the best way to know that you know something is if you can teach it to somebody else. And whilst teaching it to somebody else, that person's got a different brain, a different mindset to you. So that person can be able to add on to what you're saying. As you said earlier on, when you came in here, I was describing something to another colleague of ours, another business model. But the reason why I describe my business models whenever I think of them to other people is because I want to get inputs from that other person, an independent mindset. That's another thing that people have a fear of, hey, he's going to steal my business. Get people that you feel comfortable talking to, you know what I mean? Then if they join in your belief, then they'll join you. If they don't, then they don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's always better to have different mindsets when you're building into something, right?
But the weird thing with our community, the whole bouncing of ideas thing, I think it has a lot of elements because it's not just when you have a business idea. If you want to do anything, like let's say when I started the whole podcast thing, I always fear people getting too friendly with me because then they don't want to be blunt or frank when I come through with an idea and tell them, yo, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to build, because they want to be friendly. They don't want to say, oh, this is what you're doing will fail, how are you going to market, blah, blah.
But here's my thing. If people respond to you in that manner, that means those are not the people that you're supposed to be speaking to. Because fundamentally, if you're going to start a business, you don't want a bunch of, yeah, it's a great idea. You know what you do? No. You want someone who's going to knock you. When you came in here, Lukanya was knocking me. He was saying, but what about these costs? What about these costs? What about these costs? It's people that you want to bounce off ideas from. It's people that are going to tell you about the negative
stuff. Yeah, don't call them haters.
It's not haters. It's somebody who's encouraging you. A hater is someone that'll say, ah, you'll never make it in this thing. That he didn't even listen to your conversation, didn't even listen to your idea. He just decided to come and tell you funny things. But a person who's constructive is the type of person who will tell you that, you know what, in actual fact, you need to think about this. Why don't you think about this? And if you've thought about it, then convince them more. Because if you've thought about something and you've done the proper feasibility studies, I was saying initially, then when a person starts to knock you on the sense of saying, hey, but what about the labor costs? You're like, no, don't worry. On page 3, you see, this is how I worked out the labor cost. Then that person will go back and say, okay, I see your labor cost, but I wasn't thinking of them in that way. What about this labor cost? Like, okay, maybe I didn't think about that. You add it on and you do another revisit to feasibility to the study to see how it's been improved. Because the person that you know, you bounce your ideas off of, must improve your original model. Mm. If that person doesn't improve your original model, then that person is not someone you should be bouncing ideas off.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But now, here's another thing that we need to start. If we go back to the fundamentals of business, after you've got your vision, you've got your mission, you've got everything sorted out with who you're going to pitch to and who your business must have an image. You are the image of your company, right?
Uh-huh.
So you must always know that you're representing your image, and you must keep that very, very neat, because once your image gets damaged, for instance,
mm-hmm.
If we talk about sports stars, Oscar Pretorius was a brand.
Yeah.
He was an image.
Mm-hmm.
Once his image got tainted, everything he has is gone with
mm-hmm.
that image. You know what I mean? Every time somebody hears, before, if you heard Oscar Pretorius, originally, it was like, ah, the amputee.
Mm-hmm.
That was first.
Mm-hmm.
Second, it was like, Oscar Pretorius, like, oh, Oakley, the glasses, oh,
mm-hmm.
the sprinter guy. No,
mm-hmm.
he's this, he's famous, whatever. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Then you started to think of him as a brand. Oscar Pretorius, oh, the world champion, the guy, the only amputee to run with it. Now, if you think about him, you think about something completely different. You know
yep.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he's officially tainted his image. And that's another thing that you must be careful of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That even though you've got a lot of businesses, those businesses are somehow connected to you, and your image becomes those businesses. And most people don't want to do business with an individual that is always in the newspapers about whatever.
Yeah,
if it's good things,
mm-hmm.
sure, then they want to be associated with those good things. But if you're always in the newspaper about beef or whatever it is, or doing stuff, or treating people in a specific
unless
way.
Unless your business is to have beef. Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. If your business is in the hip-hop industry and like
mm-hmm.
beef sells, yeah, no, but I mean, in a normal business sect
mm-hmm.
is what I'm trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, you have to build your image. Yeah? And after you build your image, now, here's the biggest part of the whole thing, that people don't formalize their businesses most of the times.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And now, another thing comes into the fact that there's two different types of people out there. There's people who can outsource things and get other people to do it for them.
Mm.
And then there's people that do things themselves.
Yeah.
That's fundamental. Now, I'm one of those people that I'd like to experience something before I buy into it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I would like to do it myself. Like, the business idea I was talking about earlier on. The reason why I know it so well is because when I went down there and I took a quad bike and I went and I did the actual trail,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got the business developed like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that I wanted to do with the pub, whatever,
mm-hmm.
was that when I went overseas, I actually saw it
mm-hmm.
being implemented, and I thought, hey, how can I take this and convert it into such a way that it'll work in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
you know, considering the terrain and everything like that. So you have to also understand things like that, and you have to do them yourselves before you can do that.
So then now, the other thing, a week or a couple of weeks ago before we did this thing, you said you were working on your master's, and when I discussed doing the episode, you were like, yeah, the stuff that I'm working on could actually be a great addition. Would you like to go through all the stuff and the people are listening now?
My master's is basically based on the hindrances to the growth of construction SMMEs
mm-hmm.
Within the Gauteng region.
Mm-hmm.
That's now economic growth grade. I don't know if you understand the grades of the CIDB.
No, I don't. I have no clue.
So the grades of the CIDB work in such a way that they grade you based on the finances,
mm-hmm.
and they also grade you based on the work that you are able to do, the past work that you have done. Past work that you have done. Let's do that. The past work that you actually have done and your past work that you've completed. So then there's grades 1 to 2. So when you go into grade 1, there's no prerequisite for you to have done anything.
Mm.
It's just a normal grading that you everybody signs up for.
Mm.
So now you've paid 450 for grading, right? You've registered your company, you go to the CIDB, you register your company as either you choose construction or civil engineering, mechanical, electrical, or whatever specific site that you choose to go into. But now, there's a lot of people that just apply for this grade, you know, this grade 1,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? And there was a guy that I was reading about that complained about that and said, but now you have a bunch of people applying for grade 1, but these people have never been vetted for anything. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So now these people haven't been vetted for anything and they just go into grade 1 and there they are now. There's a flood of people in grade 1.
Mm-hmm.
Now what the companies in grade 9 do, because the grade 9 companies are forced now to work with a smaller SMME in whatever project that they get,
mm-hmm.
right? With new government regulations, right, 30% is supposed to go to SMME.
Mm-hmm.
When they get a project, they just go and find someone that they can front with.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've never been vetted. I mean, you're just this guy that has a grading. So anybody can basically go register for a grading. They could find a gardener and say, hey, listen, go and open a company and then go register for a grade one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll say we're working with your company.
Mm-hmm.
You are the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you this much money. You know what I mean? Then nobody ever grades that. So you're just there. But what that guy was arguing about, he was saying, it's not, sometimes there's some that the limitation that you can't limit people to what you want them to do. Let everybody be able to go wherever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always been a thing that if you have got some expertise in something, meaning you studied for it,
mm-hmm.
it makes you more inclined to succeed in that,
mm-hmm.
right? Mark Zuckerberg would never have made such a success of Facebook if, let's say, for instance, he was, I don't know, marine biologist, for instance. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? He understands the business principles and understands his idea. That's how he can develop it. You have to have invest. That's what that guy is arguing about. That guy
mm-hmm.
is saying you have to have a technical background in something before you can actually use that thing to get you a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that if you're a teacher, you can't have a construction company. For
mm-hmm.
sure you can,
mm-hmm.
if you like. You know what I mean? But you must get a background of what that construction thing is about so you don't get used by the other companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what he was saying, that the people are getting used and they don't even see themselves as being used.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So, okay, in that essence, there's that aspect of the study that I learned. And there's also an aspect where it says, that's where I learned all my things now that I was saying to you, that I'm starting to find out where to get the funding from
mm-hmm.
for whatever. You know what I mean? Most people have this thing of, I'm going to start selling my guinea. I don't need any... Sometimes as an entrepreneur, we have to see ourselves further.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And another thing that we must move away from is this thing that large enterprises use us
mm-hmm.
and then they keep us small so that they can keep eating.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I mean? Like, I'm never going to get them onto this level, so I'm going to keep them there. I'm going to give them jobs just to keep them there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And as they want to elevate, they must elevate according to my pace as the bigger one.
Yeah.
You can't go over me. You must...
Yeah.
You know, come up a little bit, come up a little bit, come up a little bit. And that's, that too is a little bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that I found in my study is that I thought it was only a thing, right? Amongst what I thought it was something that I see. But I've realized another thing is that most black entrepreneurs don't want to assist other black entrepreneurs. I have a feeling that, and I read a couple of times, that people want to push other people down so that they can be the only ones shining.
Crabs in a bucket effect.
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. But now here's the thing that these crabs don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That if you build a network, right,
yeah.
of crabs, you as crabs can always challenge. A bunch of students can always challenge a bully.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't challenge a bully by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You, in turn, take that bullying mentality and you bully the next guy. That's what normally happens. That's what happens in business, because I bully you,
mm-hmm.
you decide, hey, you know what, I'm a suck up to Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a so Caesar, I've got the same traits as him.
Mm-hmm.
Then you bully the next guy, then
mm-hmm.
you say, hey, Caesar, look at this one, he's a what. Then you bring him to me, then you hope that I'm not going to bully you as much now, because
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be laughing at you bullying the next guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Little do I understand that if you and that next guy decide to stand with each other,
mm-hmm.
then my position is in jeopardy. Do you understand what I mean?
For sure.
Then that's the type of mentality, and most people don't see it like that. Like, I found myself quite a number of times trying to get to beg people.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally begging people to listen to listen to me, give me a chance to have a presentation to them. I mean, I was begging people to ask them. I'm still begging people now to listen to my proposal
mm-hmm.
Within the construction sector. And I'm highly listening to people. I'm like, people, please just give me a chance to put across my proposal. And my proposal currently is not even a thing. After I've read my studies and I've done these dissertation things, these master's things, I've actually come up with a better understanding of what business is about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And in that, I try to write in my proposal and the presentation that I try to give to these companies, where I say, help us out. You know what I mean?
Mm.
A business must adopt someone.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Adopt. If you're a big business, adopt a couple of people, right?
No.
Build that program through those people, and then that program will then feed on to the next younger generation of people.
As you're saying, what you're saying now, like, I've been in the arts field for a minute, the hip hop, rap business side, since high school, and most of the things you're saying are valid, even from how to handle yourself as a business, as an artist, because most of the things is, let's say you want to create that whole brand, that whole image and stuff, and then you want to get a sponsor for your event, your fill up. At the end of the day, you can get a sponsor for today's show, and when you do the next show, you need to start from scratch. So that means whoever you did business with, you're still not on their level.
Yes.
Because now you still need to go out and
ask for a sponsor.
Yeah, so at the same time, that sponsor did nothing for you. They just helped you do a show.
But they didn't help you, they helped themselves to market.
Okay, yeah.
See, what the biggest misconception people have is that sponsors come to help you. This is not, we must get that thing out of our head where we talk about sponsors that help people. Sponsors don't help you.
Yeah.
They are there for marketing. There's no sponsor that said, hey, if a sponsor is helping you, they'll tell you, hey, KG, you know what? For your concert, you said you want to have a big hip hop concert. That's fine. Here's R1 million.
Yeah.
Go about it. Don't worry.
Have banners. Blah blah blah.
No, they'll tell you no. If they were helping you, they'll tell you, ah, no, don't worry about our banners. Put banners of yourself. We will pay for you to put banners of yourself and brand. That's helping you. Helping you is not, we'll put banners of ourselves. You know what I mean? You think when Casper Nieves is holding the bottle, Ciroc, it's because he wants to. It's because Ciroc is giving him money to brand. They associate with him. They're using Casper Nieves' brand. So these two brands are using each other. There's no helping involved. You use me, I use you. Clap. So when sponsors come to your event, those sponsors are paying for advertising and they're paying to be associated with the brand that is you.
You understand?
So in that sense, people must stop getting away with this thing. And you're right when you say that the sponsors will work with you when they want, and then they won't work with you whenever they don't want.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So you must also learn that those essence that you don't always get help from sponsorships, because they also want their little 10-piece from the situation. And as you said, that you need to grow as people in such a way that you actually challenge them. Do you understand what I mean? Because let's say, for instance, Jordans.
Yeah.
When he started, when he started was Nike, Nike Jordans. Do you understand what I mean? Then he just blew up completely, and people bought into the brand. Now you don't even think about Nike. I'm not sure about the business model. I don't know if Nike owns some of the Jordans, or they own a specific portion of the brand. I don't know that.
But
the brand is now no longer Nike Jordans. It's switched. It's Jordan. Because that guy made it in such a way that he blows the other one out of the way. Nobody ever thinks about that one anymore. You know what I mean? They just think, I want Jordans. Now, if you can go to a person now, let's say you go to somewhere and you say, hey, listen, I want Nikes. I want Nikes. Jordans, Nikes. They're like, no, man. You don't want Nikes. You want Jordans. Because that's the name that they understand. Now. That's a brand that's out there. So I would hope that as South African entrepreneurs, we actually get to the level of
overtaking
these brands. I mean, SAB is making a lot of money.
Even the guy we had on the show last week, this is his rolling paper brand, and we were talking how he went about starting the whole thing and not associating with the big companies because they wanted to brand, or you know, that charitable association thing we were talking about. They wanted to have a branch in South Africa, and he was going to be the face of
the branch, rather than
have a 100% black-owned rolling paper company.
Unfortunately, that's what happens most of the time. We get swallowed in this environment where these companies take us over and they give us a fat check and they give us a nice smile, and we're like, oh wow, I get to drive this nice stuff. So you don't want to hustle, basically. You don't want to go down into the ground and get your hands dirty. Instead, you want to be the face of something. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there are some people who were the face of companies, and as they were the face of companies, as the companies grew, they got their own branches of the company in South Africa. They're like, okay, now you are the owner of this branch, you know what I mean? So now people own KFCs and they own McDonald's, they own whatever of their own, right? But that doesn't distinctively put away from anything. It's good if you want to go that way. There's some people who want to go that way, then that's fine. But there's some people who are just hell-bent on starting from scratch. But then the problem that you'd find, like with this guy that you just showed me now, is that he's got his brand, but nobody ever buys into his brand. Because another problem that we have with black consumers, unfortunately, is that we don't buy into the product per se, but we buy into the name. And that's the biggest problem that I have with most South African consumers, especially our high-end consumers, whereby a person would make a perfectly good brand. Perfectly good brand. I mean, I know so many people who make the most awesomest traditional clothes, the most awesomest, like the blanket, for instance, that was a subject of conversation a couple of months back.
Yeah, gentrification.
Louis Vuitton. I know, okay, that but the history goes back to say the blanket was donated by the English to the Basut.
Okay.
Okay, grand sure, but the Basut have made that their identification. That's how they identify themselves. That blanket, automatically, when you see it, Basutu blanket. Now Louis Vuitton has gone and said, oh, okay, I like this. What if I do this? They take the same blanket, but 30,000 rand for a blanket. And people are like, wow, I love this. Because now you're not wearing the blanket anymore.
You're wearing the shirt.
Your whole self-esteem is based on the label that you're wearing instead of the brand that you drive. Same thing with vehicles. The Ghanaians are producing perfectly good SUVs. You know, we could buy them. Bring up the African economy, but no, in actual fact, when we start looking at you, you laugh. Instead of helping the Ghanaians, saying, you know what, guys, if you were guys, if the Southern government goes to the Ghanaian and like, listen, guys, can you build a factory in South Africa? Then the ones that we produce in South Africa will be shaped differently. Like normal cars are Toyota, the cars that are in Mozambique, the cars that are in Zimbabwe are different to the shapes that you find in South Africa. Both based on conditions, the road conditions, the weather and what is, but it, but the shapes are different too. You know what I mean? So if they were to make them, say, can I put a factory here in South Africa, we'll help you, then you hire South Africans, you know what I mean? And then we develop the African economy, then we make the cars suited for South African conditions, it would work. Do you understand what I mean? So, but we are so overtaken by, I don't have anything against the brands, because they are doing excellent branding. If a guy from Italy can sell to a South African
as a Singahat
without ever putting his foot in South Africa, I mean, they sell Jordans, Michael Jordan. This is the infatuation that we have with international brands, is that they are there, and we see the stars wearing them, like, oh, Louis, no, look at the Ronaldo's wearing
Louis. You know what, one weird thing I'm finding now, like, we are having a lot of companies, a lot of people starting new brands, starting new products, and they're pricing their stuff out of our reach. I don't know if you know the Matosa shits.
Yes.
Yo,
but do you understand why he's doing that?
Why?
Because he's trying to have the same effect that Louis and them are having on us.
You know, for me, even, like, I'm an average Joe. I first and foremost, I don't buy branded things. I'd like to buy locally produced.
Yes.
And now, the locally produced ones are selling at branded prices.
Now, here's the thing. What has happened in essence is that the guy has done an analysis of the market, and he saw that, okay, there are people who are buying these things. What makes people buy? Now, there's another problem that I found around the people that I've been hanging around with. I won't speak for all South Africans. I don't know a majority of South Africans, but I'll tell you about the people that I've been hanging around with. We don't buy something for, as I said, product or sometimes quality even. You know, we buy it just for the mere fact that it costs a lot. That's why people buy stuff. Like, you find the Makosa things, like, ah, this thing is nice, right? And then you won't buy it. But a person who can afford to buy it will buy it. And when they bought it, the person won't, they don't have any chill here. They will show you that I can afford to buy these things. Most of the times, for instance, I've got a very funny problem. I'm not attacking anyone, but there's a huge sect of South African people that buy a G-Wagon, for instance. A G-Wagon is a Mercedes-Benz SUV, right? They buy it. If you look at the advert for a G-Wagon, right, the initial adverts, they changed it now because they started to see that most people, unfortunately, of our descent, decide to buy it. This is not South African only. This is international. It's American. It's wherever. They buy the G-Wagon because it's a status symbol. When you've got a G-Wagon,
not the utility vehicle.
A G-Wagon is a German military vehicle. That's where it started. And it's made, right? So that it goes in deep into a trench. It's got a weight and depth of whatever. It's got the most excellent off-road ability of any vehicle.
Mm.
Any vehicle. It's, I'm sure, I can put it down. It's better, for, according to me, it's better than a Land Rover off-road.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you find our people driving it sideways over a speed hump. The same vehicle. Mm. You know what I mean? That's, they don't use it for its purpose.
Mm.
It's their money. That's what they'll argue.
Yeah,
I mean, it's my money, I can afford. You can't even afford this.
Mm.
And then the problem I have with people is when people cannot substantiate the argument, they tend to run to the aspects of, it's my money, you can't afford it, so you can't talk. I'm not talking about me being able to afford it. I'm talking about you buying something for its purpose. Are you going to buy a pen so that you can scratch your head with it?
Mm.
Yeah, sure, if you've got a lot of money, then go ahead.
Mm.
But that's not what a pen is made for. You understand? And that's an argument that I sometimes have with the people. And the people that are pricing the things where they are pricing them, like the close-up brand, is because they've seen that the buying mentality of the customer,
that's where it is.
That guy did his feasibility study. He found out that the buying mentality, even if you don't buy it, you don't have to buy it.
No, I like to buy it.
Yes, you'd like to.
I don't have money.
Yes, but
like
even if
that.
You had money, the way you are thinking, you probably wouldn't. You know what I mean? But those people that are thinking like that, there's a lot of them. And that's why he's making money. And that's why he's so famous. That's why he's so in that class that he's
like
in.
Mad props to the guy. Well,
yes,
I'll look
mad
up
props.
His name and then get,
he did
give him a plug.
He did investigate. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? He did investigate his market. He did find what he wanted to find. And that's who he's selling to. And you can't press him down for that because that's his feasibility study. As you say, Liwena, that guy who's selling those things, he's got
rolling
his market.
There's
rolling papers. He's got his market. He's defined that his market is this. You understand? So I've got no problem against those guys that sell that.
Right.
If they've done their market study and they show that this is the market that they want to address, note, that guy sells one shirt. Let's say, I don't know what his pricing is, but let's say it's 30,000 rand for a shirt, for instance. If he sells one shirt, he can cover his rent wherever he is for a whole month with that one shirt that he sold. Instead of selling a million shirts, that's his
limited edition.
Yeah, that's his design study. And I've got nothing. No, we're not discussing him now. We're discussing his business methodology.
Yeah, the
you understand?
Abstract version of.
So you've got your business. But another thing that we have as black people is that we must start supporting our own. And now the problem that we put on our entrepreneurs is that if we go buy a lot of Louis, the next guys that have to sell are now stuck in a predicament whereby they judge based on how much work it took them to get the thing. Then let's say you're pricing a Louis shirt is 40,000, let's say. And then you work out that to make your shirt will cost you 1,000 rand. So you sell your shirt for 2,000 rand. Then people look at the Louis that's 40 and they look at yours that's 2. Then they're like, ah, this is cheap stuff. It's going to break. Or it's not going
to
work. It's going to tear after 2 months. It's got nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you've calculated how much it's going to cost you. And sometimes it works vice versa, whereby Mr. Price shirt will cost 100 rand and your cost shirt will cost 600 rand. But you calculated yours based on what it costs for you to make the shirt. You know what I mean? That's why you said yours is 600 rand. Then the people will be like, ah, the shirt at Mr. Price is much better looking than this one. You are overpriced. Then they'll go to Mr. Price and buy that. So it's a catch 22. You have to understand your market, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think we've said a lot. This might probably be the longest episode in the whole podcast. As I said at the start of the episode, definitely should have planned it out. Maybe a three-part series or something like that. But I don't want to interrupt his flow, so it's going to be the whole thing. And hopefully you guys can... Actually, I'm going to split it up in editing. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Anything you want to tell the people... Plug your social media, where they can find you.
I don't want to be found, actually.
Okay.
It's just that you're going to continue doing what you do and push hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing can stop you if you've got the drive and stick to it. And there are another thing, there are people that are born to be business people and there are people that are born to work. There's a big difference between the two. And you might find that 90% of the time, you find that the ones that are born to be business people are stuck in work conditions where they have to work, right? Try your best to set out your life in a methodology that works out best for you and then break up and break away from that. And as I'm saying that, I haven't done it myself, you know, so it's kind of like contradictory, but you must.
Yeah.
I mean, some of us are just not born to be permanent employees. I can't find a 30-year certificate in any company. That's never going to work unless it's my own.
Hallelujah to that. But yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, check you guys again next week, Monday, 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm out.